You know, there must be something in the water here in Oklahoma. We've talked about Dick Tracy, Chester Gould. He was born in Pawnee, Oklahoma in 1900. Then we have Bill Mauldin, cartoons of Willie and Joe.
Oh, yeah.
He joined Oklahoma's 45th Division, and that's where he drew his humor. He was a Santa Fe, New Mexico native, and he joined the 45th Division at 18.
Okay.
We also have Carol and Jack Bender, who continued the Alley-Oop comic strip.
Yes. As I recall, they lived about a mile away from my parents' last home.
It's interesting, with Dick Tracy and Chester Gould, Chester introduced the two-way wrist radio.
Yeah.
And the closed-circuit television, both of which were later invented. I'm wearing a Dick Tracy watch, so to speak, right now, an Apple Watch, where I can talk into it just like Dick Tracy did.
Yeah, I know. He prided himself on that, things that were ahead of time. Yeah, and I mean this in the kindest way. Chester was kind of a functional madman. His imagination was so bizarre, if you read the strip. The characters, the villains, and B.O. Plenty and Gravel Gertie, he was just wonderful. And yet, if you'd meet him, he looked like a little banker. When I met him in Chicago, he had his little snap-brim hat and suit and tie and overcoat. He looked like my grandfather, who was in the banking business. But he had the brightest blue eyes. It was just like there was this wildness lurking behind these eyes. He was great.
He was talking to you, another cartoonist, and he was very respectful, I'm sure, of your work.
I guess he was. I don't remember. I just remember I looked into those eyes. I thought, oh, wow, just blazing out at me out of this otherwise very, I don't know what to call him, a staid, average-looking Midwestern guy.
I was reading that back then when I was in my early teens, and I remember when he introduced Sam Ketchum to the cartoon strip, and Sam Ketchum had a hard time catching on. They were always a little leery of Sam Ketchum, and he was always this person that it seemed like he was always new, and they hadn't totally accepted him. And I haven't read it for a long time. I don't know. I hope they've accepted Sam Ketchum by now.
What I remember about Sam is he always had a cigarette sticking out of his mouth.
That's right. Did you have cigarettes or beer with Broomhilda?
Yeah. I'm kind of almost a throwback to my parents' generation. I really enjoyed vaudeville humor and the early radio humor shows. And when Broomhilda started out, she smoked cigars and was drinking beer and that kind of stuff. And that became not the thing to do, so that phased out of the strip. But yeah, I was that way for a while, sure.
Here I have the comic pages from yesterday's Tulsa World. If you have any comment about them, of course, Blondie. Did you have any interaction with the creators of Blondie?
No. Chick Young created Blondie, and as I recall, he died around 1970.
Mm-hmm.
His son took it over, but I don't know if that meant he just hired writers or what. I really don't know.
And there's Garfield.
Jim Davis, when he first got the comic strip, I had formed my own corporation early on, and he called me. When he was in his first year, he said, I hear you have a corporation. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, how does that work? And so forth. And I told him, okay, and explained it to him. He said, thank you. And that was the last contact I ever had with him, just that one phone call.
How about Beetle Bailey, Mort Walker's?
I met Mort Walker, who's now dead. I made it the point to try to meet as many of these people as I could way back when I was beginning. I was starstruck. And I went to Mort's home in Connecticut and met him, and he was very gracious and spent some time together. That was the only time I ever saw him.
Was he a military person? I wonder why he chose the military theme.
Yeah, he was in the Army, and that's how he got that idea. He was a Kansas City boy.
Well, it's fun to go through this and then to turn the page, and there's Broomhilda.
Well, good. You know, it's funny. It's a very isolated business. You sit in your room or wherever you sit all year and do it by yourself, and the conventions are about the only time that you meet the other people, unless you happen to live in an area. It used to be many of the cartoonists lived in New York or outside of New York, because that's where the magazines and the syndicates were headquartered, but now they're spread all over the country. So unless you go to the conventions, you just don't meet these people.
There you are, Russell Myers. I never thought I'd be talking to the creator of Broomhilda. sometimes when you go into your office, as you say, and you want to set to work, do you have, as writers do, they'll have writer's block days that just ideas do not come to you?
No, I have never had writer's block. What I've had is quality variation. What I mean by that, I've always believed that if you just put a whole lot of stuff down on paper, you'll get enough out of that to do your work. But what will happen, let's say I write 10 ideas, one day 8 or 9 of them are usable, and next day I write 10 and 1 or 2 of them are usable. So the law of averages will just give me enough to keep going. But I've never not been able to put something on paper. It just depends on, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not good.
Do you ever run your ideas against your wife and say, what do you think of this?
No, I never have. She's like my kids. She's not particularly interested in what I do. She's glad that I did it and we all ate well and everything. But no, not really.
So your ideas are in the office. I mean, sometimes my best ideas come when I'm driving around. Do ideas come to you? You go out for a walk or drive and then you think, oh, Broomhilda could say this.
No, they don't come to me. I say, okay, it's time to write. So I write the stuff. I write it down on paper and then put it in my notebook. And then I really don't think about it after that. A couple weeks ago, I got an idea, which surprised me because I never get them unless I'm actually trying to write them.
You just have it. You improved and you learned along the way, but it just is that quirky gift that you were given.
That's the best way that I can describe it. You have this little gift to take ordinary things and tweak them and make them hopefully funny, and it's just something that you can do. Yeah, that's just the way it is, and it's not something that you can explain, except I think we explained it pretty well in the way you said it.
Did most of these other cartoonists, Chester Gould and so forth, do you sense that they also started young, they just couldn't help from keep doing it?
I've read a lot about Chester. Chester wanted to be a cartoonist, and he tried and he tried and he tried for 10 years. He just worked his butt off for 10 years and couldn't get anything going until finally in 1931, he got Captain Patterson up at the Chicago Tribune to accept Dick Tracy. First, it was going to be called Plain Clothes Tracy, but then they shortened it to Dick because Dick was shortened for cop back then. But he, in a similar sense to me, just tried and tried and tried and finally succeeded, you know, overnight after 10 years of trying.
Have you sensed that sometimes you strayed off the sense of humor for Broomhilda and then you thought, wait a minute, I'm getting away, I'm not the way it was, and I need to get back on track again?
I don't remember anything like that. Once or twice I tried some political thing and make a political comment, and I was so bad at it that I thought, well, that's not for me. But mainly, no, I don't recall anything like that. I've kind of gotten the groove and stayed in it. I think I'm aware of my limitations now.
How is it now? You do a cartoon and then you send it on to where?
I send it to a place called Quad Graphics up in Wisconsin, and I'm not really sure how it works anymore. They take care of the printing and it goes from there, and then I think it's sent back to the syndicate where my editor checks it or edits it, and then it's sent out to newspapers. I honestly am not sure of the mechanical details of how it works.
Has your editor ever rejected, oh, you can't run this one?
I've had the same editor for almost 25 years. It's a woman that I just dearly love, and we get along. And I've pretty much mastered the boundaries of what I can and can't get away with. And she has maybe 2 or 3 times in 10 years suggested that something might not be appropriate. I've gotten to where now I can smell it ahead of time, and if I think something is not going to be a good idea, then I'll ask her, and usually she agrees that it's not. But essentially, no. I'm one for easy ones because I don't give her any trouble and I don't require any nursing or anything.